Almighty. So to introduce our brother Jonah's thoughts tonight, he's asked that we take a reading from Luke chapter 12 and verses 35 to 40. So we'll ask our brother Vaughan Connell up to read that for us.
Reading with you all from Luke chapter 12. Let your waist be girded and your lamps burning. And you yourselves be like men who wait for their master when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they may open to him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly, I say to you that he will gird himself and have them sit down to eat and will come and serve them. And if he should come in the second watch, or come in a third watch, and find them so, blessed are those servants. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched, and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect.
All right, thanks for that, Vaughan. We'll now ask our brother Jonah Ford around the theme, Understanding Our World in 2018.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening. Give me a little bit more enthusiasm than that. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Oh, that's awesome. That's brilliant. It's so nice to be with you. I flew up, got up this morning at 3:30, me and brother Glenn. Right, then we travelled up here and we got here nice and early, and then I went to go for a sleep this afternoon, but it's so freezing in my room. It's like a cave, like a dungeon. So hopefully I can get through tonight. And I'm excited for what I've got to share with you tonight, because it's all about understanding our world and where we fit into it, and where the return of Christ fits into where our world is at the moment as well. Now, I love coming to study week. I went to 5 study weeks, and I was reminiscing on the board, all the photos in there, and I found 2 photos, one from my first study week in 1994 and one from my second study week in, sorry, not second, last study week in 2004. So I'll just put them up. This is not me, this is my beautiful... Changed a little bit, haven't I, right? This is my beautiful wife, who I actually met, right, at that study week, and Sparks. Right? That was 1994, and this is me, you won't recognise me, but I dyed my hair that white, in beautiful black, that is me, back in 2004, in my absolute prime, right? So... I love coming to study with, and it's so nice to come here and share this night with you. Now, our world that we're living in at the moment, it's hard to get your head around. There's just so much stuff that happens every day. It's actually water, it's not like lemonade. Our world is just, it just seems to be so much stuff going on every day. It's hard to sort of put it all in perspective and understand where Jesus fits into it, where Jesus' return fits into it. And the reading that we did, the short reading that we did, Jesus talks about why it's important for us to understand where we are in our world. And that's why we just want to spend a little bit tonight looking at understanding our world in 2018. Now, I can see that I'm going to be, like, always pointing to this one, so if don't be offended, right? I'll try my best to get over here when I can, but I can see I'm going to have a leaning towards this one. But Jesus said it was really important for this reason in some of those verses that we just read. He said this in Luke chapter 12. Jesus said, stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning and be like men who are waiting for their master to come home from the wedding feast so that they may open the door to him immediately when he knocks. Now, the picture that Jesus is painting there is a picture of like a Jewish wedding. A And the Jewish weddings that they used to have weren't like our weddings that just go for one day or half a day or whatever. Their weddings would sometimes go for a whole week. And Jesus is describing a master of a household, and he likens it to himself, who goes to a wedding feast, and his servants are waiting at home for him to come back. And they don't know exactly when he's going to come back, but they're waiting very, very carefully for him to come. And when that master of the house finally comes home at a time that they weren't expecting, when he returns, the key word is there, that they open unto him. As soon as he knocks on that door, bang, the door opens, and they're there ready to welcome him. Immediately, they are there ready to greet their master. And that's what Jesus says, I want you guys to be like. I want you, when I return, to greet me immediately. Isn't that nice? Like when you go on a trip somewhere, how good is it when you get to the airport, when the end of that trip, and someone's at the airport, when you come out of that, you know, you walk through the whole thing and you finally get to the end of it, and you come out of the end, and there's someone there to greet you, your mum or your girlfriend or something, and they're there to greet you. It's such a nice feeling, isn't it? It's like when I come home from work every day, at the moment, I've got four kids, and I just get the most unbelievable welcome when I get home. And I make the most of it because I know very soon it's going to change. But I get home, I open the door, and the first little kid to come in is my little girl, Mia. List three, she jumps on me. She loves me. She's like, Dad, I miss you. Then Mia jumps on me. Then Izzy, my other little girl, she jumps on me. And then Ethan, who's 13, he doesn't quite jump on me at the moment, still at the moment. But he's still like, Dad, how's your day? It's absolutely awesome. Then Leanne, my wife, she comes and jumps on me as well. And cuddles me and says, I've made all this food for you. It's absolutely brilliant. I come and sit down. It's just the most unbelievable welcome home I get. And Jesus says, that's what I want when I come. I want some people here on this world. When I come to knock on my return, I want some people to welcome me immediately. That's what Jesus said in these chapters. But he also said in these verses that I need you to watch carefully to wait for that time, because I'm going to come back at a time that is going to be a little bit inconvenient. Look what he said here in this next verse. This is Matthew chapter 24 in a similar record. This is so funny drinking from this thing. Thanks for this. He says in Matthew, but know this, that if the master of the house had known what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake, and he would have not let his house be broken into. Therefore, you must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect. So Jesus says, I want you to be ready for me when I come and welcome me immediately when I return. But I also want you to remember that my return is going to be a little bit like when a thief comes into a household and someone is completely unprepared. And he says, what I want you to be like is someone who knows that that thief is going to come and prepares for them to come and not be caught out. We got broken into our house a couple of years ago. And this is how unprepared and unsuspecting we were of a break-in. We went away for Easter, we came home, we unpacked all our stuff, we went back to normal life for 3 weeks, okay? 3 weeks until my wife is going to get a piece of jewellery out of the bathroom, right, from her little jewellery box, and she's like, honey, have you seen my jewellery? I'm like, yeah, look, I have taken some, I did use some the other day. I said, no. She goes through and she's like, that's missing. And then she found it. Oh my goodness, I'm missing this, this, and this. And then we went and looked around the house, and there's all these other things missing. And we found out, then we went into Ethan's room, and the whole window was broken into. And for 3 weeks, we hadn't even realized. Right? 3 weeks. Now, that is just an unsuspecting person, isn't it? And Jesus says, I don't want you to be like that. I want you to be ready, as he says in that verse. I want you to be awake. And if you knew that a thief was going to come to your house or might come to your house, you'd prepare, wouldn't you? you put those little locks on the windows. That's the first thing I did, put all the locks on the windows. And I was going to be prepared for next time when he comes. I was going to be ready. And Jesus says, that's what I want you to be like. I want you to be ready. And what are we looking for? What are we watching for in the world to be ready? Well, here I go again. Well, Jesus didn't leave us in the dark, okay, about what the world would be like when he came and returned. In fact, he put it this way, and he puts this responsibility on all of us here. He says, when you see a cloud rising in the west, you say at once, a shower is coming. And so it happens. And that's true, isn't it? We can discern the weather and we check our apps on our phone and we know what the weather's doing and we dress accordingly or we prepare accordingly. And Jesus says, you hypocrites, to the people he's talking to, you now know how to interpret the appearance of the earth and the sky, but why do you not know how to interpret the present time? Jesus says, I actually haven't left you in the dark. I have recorded in the Bible all the key elements. He said, as we read in our reading tonight, I've never revealed the day or the hour. I will never reveal that. But I have given you information so that you won't be in the dark, so you know what the world will be like when I am about to return to it. And that's what we want to look at tonight. We want to try and just in this short time that we've got, get a snapshot of what Jesus said the world would be like politically, what the nations would be doing in the world, and what he said about the society of the world, the state of society, what it would be like when he returned to the earth. Those two things are what we want to look at tonight. And then we want to look at our world. And we want to see how our world sits against what Jesus said. That's what we want to look at tonight. Now, I'll just keep going back to that. People are going to be laughing all night. Here's a map, and first of all, we'll look at what Jesus said about the political state of the world when Jesus returns. This is a map of a prophecy from the prophet Ezekiel. And in this map, we're going to depict what Jesus said the state of the world would be like when he returned from a political point of view. And I should probably go over here and give these guys a little bit of love. Right? This is a map of Europe, obviously, and the nations here are all the ancient names of the nations, although some of them still apply to the names of the nations today. And this is what Jesus said. It's all going to be around the nation of Israel. They are key to the events about the return of Jesus to the earth. And as a summary, Jesus said this. There is going to be a nation to the north of Israel who will be a key player in the political endgame of this world. And he will be, that nation to the north, will be in alliance with these other countries that are shaded in red. And those group of countries are going to form an alliance against the nation of Israel. But the nation of Israel, we're told, will be unsuspecting. They'll be a powerful nation at the time. They'll be a secure nation at the time. And they will be unsuspecting of an invasion that will take place. We're also told, as Jesus told us, the prophets told us, that these nations in blue here, and this nation over here in blue, would be nations which would stand against those other nations, which would start to oppose the nation of Israel. And when those alliances are in place, the prophet Ezekiel says that there would be this massive invasion that would take place into the land of Israel, and that will be the catalyst to bring about the return of Jesus Christ. So that, in a snapshot over there, and I'll just come over here as well and give you some love, that in a snapshot is what Jesus said the state of the political world will be like at his return. I'll just take a drink. Now, let's have a think about our world now. When you think about the politics of our world and the state of our world at the moment and what happens in the newspaper and on the internet about our world, What's the first thing you think of at the moment that just dominates everything? Donald Trump, isn't it? I mean, it's just every day you look at the paper, this face is right in front of you, okay? Those beautiful orange lips, that orange face, that nose is just in your face all day. This next slide is like an animated GIF of him. It's my favourite one. It just summarises him absolutely perfect. I just absolutely love that. I just reckon it summarises everything that he's about. But isn't he just on the front... Isn't he just on the front page of everything at the moment? All right, I'll get rid of that because he's just so funny. Just one more time. I just think it's so funny. Just one more. All right, he's on the front page of everything. All right, now whether you like him or hate him, right? There is no doubt about it that Donald Trump has completely shaken up our world. He's completely changed it. You think about the 2 years or the 3 years, because the year when he was sort of running for president, we've heard nothing but this man, and he has completely shaken up the world. You know what? God often uses men like this. He often uses arrogant, proud men like Donald Trump to do his purpose. You think about Pharaoh. You think about Nebuchadnezzar. They're all men like Trump. Proud men that God was able to use to bring about his purpose. And that's exactly what Donald Trump has done. He has shaken up this world. He's done things like no other president has done before. Some of the stuff he says on Twitter, right? Look at this one here. What other president has been like this? Why would Kim Jong-un insult me by calling me old when I would never call him short and fat? Oh well, I'll try so hard to be his friend and maybe someday that will happen. Say that. Well, this one. Imagine Obama writing this tweet. Okay? North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the nuclear button is on his desk at all times. Will someone from his depleted and food-starved regime please inform him that I too have a nuclear button, but it is much bigger and more powerful than his, and my button works. I mean, what kind of president? Have we seen this before? And you can see why people get nervous, because this man actually has the nuclear button, right, at his disposal. And he treats it like that. He's certainly shaken up the world, all right? He's shaken up the world. But I want you to have a bit of a think about now some of the things that he's done and the shuffling that's happened since he's been in power, and see exactly what has happened since that time. Right? He's shaken up the world. One of the main things he's done is this. His policy has been USA first, the world second. And he said that when he was campaigning, and when he's come to power, he said, that's what I'm all about. I don't care about the rest of the world. All I care about is making America great again. The USA is first, everyone else is second. This photo here, I love this photo. This is from last year. It was like a conglomeration of all the world leaders. And all the world leaders were given at the start of that conference a badge which was like to commemorate the uniting of all the nations, right? And they're all wearing it here, right? Except him. He's wearing the Make America Great badge. So I don't care about any of the rest of the world. I just care about America. And that's what his policies have been about. They've been all about America first, and I don't really care about the rest of the world. Now, this picture here is a great picture which summarises that. This was taken just a couple of months ago at the G7 conference. And all these nations and leaders of the world were trying to get Donald Trump to sign like this unilateral agreement of all these things that they agreed upon together. And Donald Trump's like, nah, I'm not signing it. I refuse to sign it. Right? Then I think he, right at the end of the conference, he did a quick signature on it, and then apparently, just as he was leaving, he said, nah, cancel it, I'm not signing it anymore. And apparently, in this photo, this is a true story, a couple of minutes after this photo was taken, they said, can you please sign this? Can you please just give us this? Apparently, true
lollies and said, I'm not giving you anything else, but I'll give you these two lollies. Right? You can have those two Starbursts. That's what he said. He's such a strange guy, isn't he? But he put himself opposing the rest of these nations. Now, who's this woman here? Angela Merkel. She's the head of the German nation. And after that conference, and after some of the things that have been going on, Angela Merkel actually said this about the relationship that she has, or that nation has, or the Europeans have, with America. She said, it's no longer such that the United States simply protects us, but Europe must take its destiny into its own hands. That's the task of our future. So she's recognised that no longer can I rely on America to protect us. Now, that alliance has been together and sort of held the world at peace since World War II. And she says, no longer can the nations of Europe rely on America that they're going to protect them every single time. All right? Interesting, the segregation that Donald Trump has made. Now, he's pulled out of a lot of things. All right? He's pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal. He pulled out of the UN Human Rights Agreement. He pulled out of the Paris Climate Change. And all these things particularly have been like anti-European. And he's like drawn this line in the sand between him and between Europe. Just the last couple of days, in fact, I think yesterday, they had a NATO summit. And this is what Donald Trump said about his relationship with Germany and Europe in particular. And hopefully this audio works.
Germany is totally controlled by Russia because they will be getting from 60 to 70% of their energy from Russia and a new pipeline. And you tell me if that's appropriate, because I think it's not. And I think it's a very bad thing for NATO, and I don't think it should have happened. And I think we have to talk to Germany about it. But Germany, as far as I'm concerned, is captive to Russia because it's getting so much of its energy from Russia. So we're supposed to protect Germany, but they're getting their energy from Russia. Explain that. And it can't be explained, you know.
All right, and so what he's essentially saying there, though, is this. He's saying, look, we can't protect Germany if they're going to go out the back door and do all these multi-billion dollar deals with Russia. And he's saying, I can see Germany moving towards Russia and away from us. And that's exactly what is happening in our world. The Europeans are segregating from Donald Trump and the USA, all right? So that's one of the key things he's done. The US first, and I don't care about the rest of the world. The next thing he's done that he's made a point of is he's been really tight with the nation of Israel, all right? He loves Israel. Here's his best buddy. Who's this here? Benjamin Netanyahu. He's the Prime Minister of Israel. And these two guys, right, they're absolute best friends. And Donald Trump has gone out of his way since coming to power to cement that relationship with Israel. And what's one of the key things he did to cement that relationship? Does anyone know? He moved the embassy. People have been saying for years, all these US presidents, we should move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, but it was not a very good political move. Right? It was a political hot potato. And Donald Trump just went, I don't care what people say, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it quick. And here we go. This is Ivanka, right? She's always up there as well, isn't she? On the 14th of May, 2018, Donald Trump, I love how he's got his name, like everyone else's name is small and his is absolutely massive, right? They opened the embassy, the United States embassy in Jerusalem and cemented their tie. It was telling the world, we're going to support Israel no matter what. And our support for them is extremely tight. All right, so that's Donald Trump, and that's some of the things that he's been doing in the world. Now, who's the other big player in the world that sort of likes the strutty stuff? Vladimir Putin, right? Here he is. Right. Ladies, avert your eyes, okay? All right. I know he's incredibly good looking. Right. And to the Russian people, this is just like their absolute Superman. They absolutely love him. Now, I reckon this animated GIF coming up, this summarizes Vladimir Putin absolutely perfectly, I reckon. Look at this one here. summarizes him, I reckon. Like he's just a weird guy, right? But a guy that I think cannot be trusted, all right? And that's Russia in the world today. What are they doing and how is it affecting the world? Well, the first thing that's happened is Putin, just a couple of months ago, cemented 6 more years of the presidency. And that 6 years will run out in 2024, and that will mean a 24-year reign as president of Russia, although he did have a little break in between, but he basically was still the leader. And that would be the longest reign of any Russian leader. This was his inauguration. I don't know if any of you saw it, but here's a fast-forward version of his inauguration. Just absolutely... here we go here. It's a fast-forwarded. He made this huge walk from his office all the way down the huge presidential staircase into his awesome car. Very low-key, right? Very, very low-key. Didn't want to spend too much money. Got out, huge red carpet, all these guys, right? Then walked through this, right? I don't want too much fuss, all right? I just want to be low-key. Got in and had this inauguration for his next 6 years of his presidency. Now, I thought it was funny when you compare it to, this is Malcolm Turnbull's. Right, to Vladimir Putin, right? But Putin loves this kind of stuff. He loves to have the huge, big pomp and ceremony. He loves it to be all about him. I think he won the presidency like by 70% or something, right? Completely rigged, right? But he's taken the power again. He's got it for another 6 years, this man, Vladimir Putin. Every time he takes the presidency, he takes a little bit more power, right, over what's going on in the world. Now, one of the key things this man has done, particularly over the last 5 years, is he's really cemented himself into the Middle East, okay? And he did that by getting himself involved in the nation of Syria and their war. He moved in there, and last year he declared that that war was pretty much over and that he, through his strength, had managed to take that area for Syria. And now he sits in that area with his military, controlling very much the Middle East. He takes control of the Middle East. Here's a picture, right? Who does anyone know who these two other guys are? Erdogan, yeah, who's the president of Turkey. And who's this guy? I don't know how to pronounce his name. Say that again.
Hassan Rouhani,
and he is the president of Iran, right? This is a meeting which they held late last year in the city of Sochi, which is a Russian city, and they made this alliance between these three nations, Iran, Turkey, and Russia. They made an alliance, a military alliance, in the area of the Middle East. Okay, so Vladimir Putin has very much moved Russia into a controlling position in the area of the Middle East. The other thing that he's done is he's really cemented and sprouted off about his military capabilities, right? This was a couple of months ago. He did this big speech in front of the Russian press and all the Russian interests about their latest weaponry and their impact that it could have on the world. Missile.
Это очень грозное оружие.
силу его характеристик никакие даже перспективные системы ПРО ему не помеха.
So there he is, presenting this huge missile and his military capabilities and what he's able to do. I love the Russian, you know, the response from the Russian is, oh yeah, nuclear missile. Yes, yes, this is brilliant, right? Doing there is he's announcing to the world, and particularly America, that last little bit of the video where it shows the missiles finally coming to their end. It's actually over a map of Florida, which is where President Trump's house actually is. All right, so it was a clear signal to America and to the rest of the world that we're not going to be messed with, and that we are a power in this world, and that we shouldn't be ignored. And that's what Vladimir Putin is saying to the world. He's moving into very much a position of power in this world, and particularly into that area of the Middle East. And he's making key allies with Syria and with Iran and with Turkey to cement his power base in that particular region. And he's feeling confident in his ability and his power. And he loves having military parades, right? This is a parade he had just like a month or so ago, and he's always got, you know, the girls marching in those parades. And he shows off all these military wares to the world. These parades go for hours. And it was interesting this year in the parade that his very special guest that came with him was Benjamin Netanyahu. And Benjamin Netanyahu has formed an alliance with Vladimir Putin. And that's interesting, isn't it? Because we know that Israel, Jesus has told us, when that invasion happens, they'll be completely unsuspecting of the person that will invade them. And here we have Israel getting very, very close to the nation that we know will be the nation that will actually form a strike against the nation of Israel. So Vladimir Putin is exercising his power and muscle upon the world. And he's making some very, very key alliances in the world with very, very key nations. Now, what about Israel itself? What's been going on in the nation of Israel? Well, Israel as well is becoming an extremely powerful nation in the world. And they're becoming confident about their power. Their economy is one of the strongest economies in the world. And it keeps growing at a very rapid rate. I think there is more startup companies, more entrepreneurs starting businesses in Israel than any other country in the world. This week, just this week, in one of the key economic magazines, they rated the top 20 most powerful countries in the world. I think Australia came in at number 16, right, which was pretty powerful. I thought it was pretty powerful for Australia with 20 million people. Israel has a population of just 5 million people. And they were rated as the 8th most powerful nation in the world. And Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, sprouted out about his confidence about that. He said, we've come from a nation, we're only 70 years old, and in that 70 years, we've managed to climb ourselves economically into secure, powerful position, and now we are the 8th most powerful country in the world. And we are strong in our own right. And we are powerful in our own right. And that's what Jesus said. That's what the prophet said would be the spirit of Israel when it was getting close to the time that Jesus would return. Israel begins to flex their muscles. Now, when Donald Trump announced earlier this year that it was pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal, as soon as that happened, Iran fired some missiles into the nation of Israel. And Israel instantly replied to that aggression by sending its own missiles. And it put this video, which I'm going to put up next, onto the internet to show the world the capability of its missiles and its military. And it's a video showing a camera on the front of one of its missiles. And it's going to show how precise the military of Israel actually is in targeting a target, which in this case was a truck with a missile capability on it from Iran. And on the front of their missile is a camera which shows, fired from the nation of Israel, how accurate the military of Israel is at the moment. find that a scary video. I find that a really scary video. Because that shows the capabilities, doesn't it, of some of the military weaponry that is in this world. And Israel posted that video on YouTube to tell the rest of the world that this is the kind of capability we have. You know what? We're not scared anymore of other people. We're strong. And we're going to take our own destiny into our own hands. Now, one of the reasons they've got to do that is because there's so many other nations, apart from the US and some of its other key ally nations, there's so many nations in the world that are against Israel and don't like the way that Israel run things. This year was the 70th anniversary of the nation of Israel, and they celebrated that in Israel. And on the day that they celebrated it, you probably saw the news, all these Palestinians formed these huge riots against the nation of Israel, okay? And the nation of Israel used force against the Palestinians to get them out of their land. And who would know, I suppose, at the end of the day, what force, whether it was good force or whether it wasn't justified. But the world instantly, in the UN, they condemned the nation of Israel. And all the time, the UN, the United Nations, is against the nation of Israel. And they had a vote about it. All the nations that were involved in the UN, they said, who is with us in condemning the actions of the Israeli people? And 120 nations said, we want to condemn it. And there was only 8 nations that said, no, we don't want to condemn Israel. And whether exactly what they did was right or wrong, it shows that there is a spirit, particularly amongst the European nations of this world, against the nation of Israel. All right? But the other thing that Israel has done recently is it's formed some new key friendships in the world. It's starting to form key new friendships, and one of them is this one. Who's this walking down the steps of the plane? Right? Prince William. Now, he just, in the last 2 weeks, has visited the nation of Israel. Now, can anyone tell me what's significant about that?
First time a royal visit to Israel.
Who said that? Sorry. This guy here. First time ever, right, in the history of royalty, and I suppose that goes back to 1948, because that's when Israel became a nation. It's the first time that England has sent an official person from royalty to go and meet with the heads and the nation of Israel. You think, why is that the case? Why wouldn't they have done that before? And the reason why they didn't do it before is because it's always been a political hot potato, and they've always not known whether to send people because they didn't know what people would think, or they didn't know what was going on, so they've never sent anyone. But at the moment, they made the decision, yes, we're going to send William to meet with them. And the reason why they're doing that is because the UK have separated themselves from the rest of the European nations as a result of Brexit, and they're looking for new friends. They're looking for new economic partners who they can partner with. And they've said one of them is Israel. And they've made a decision to economically start to work and start to build closer alliances with the nation of Israel. So England and Israel are becoming closer. Now, the other nation that's becoming closer to the nation of Israel is this one here. Can anyone speak and interpret Arabic? This is a tweet just a week and a half ago from the Foreign Ministry of Israel. And it's a tweet directed to the National World Cup soccer team of Saudi Arabia. And that tweet, right, if you can read Arabic, I can read it very well, right, and I'll interpret it for you. He says, good luck, right? Good luck in your match against Russia. I think 1994 and then something else. That's the gist of what the tweet is. But it is essentially a tweet from the nation of Israel to the nation of Saudi Arabia wishing their World Cup team all the best in its first game in the World Cup against Russia. Now, the tweet didn't do very well because they lost 5-0. Okay, so they wouldn't have been thanking him too much after. But the significance of that is absolutely amazing, right? Because the nation of Israel and the nation of Saudi Arabia, particularly Saudi or from the Saudi Arabian side, have, since the nation of Israel became a nation, absolutely hated each other. In fact, Saudi Arabia have always said, we refuse the right even to the nation of Israel existing at all. They don't have a right to exist at all. But all of a sudden, over the last couple of years, these two nations have started to join together and become a united force. And they're starting to join together militarily and forming an alliance. And the reason why they're doing that is because Saudi Arabia fears Iran and Iran's alliance with Russia and with Turkey and those other nations together. And they're looking for other partners in the area, as well as America, to join with them to try and combat them. And that's evidence of the kind of relationship that these two nations are building. And Netanyahu just said in the last couple of months, he said, we've never had a closer try together with the nation of Saudi Arabia than what we do now. That's remarkable. Because for decades, they have hated each other. But these two nations are coming together. That's some of the key things that have been happening in the world around us. With the US and Trump, with Russia and their military, and now with the nation of Israel. Now, having taken that all in, I want us to now look at the map again of the world and think about what Jesus said the map of the world would look like politically when Jesus was about to return. I've been doing once a year, at the end of each year at our meeting, I do a talk just to summarise what's happened in the year. And I normally put together a map of the Middle East and what's happening and how the movement of the nations have been working and bringing together politically. This is what the map looked like in 2008, when Russia, and Putin here, right, naked on the top of his horse, right, he moved in 2008 and he annexed the little land here of Georgia, right, probably most of you weren't even born then, okay, but that's what happened in 2008. In 2014, when most of you were just in toddler and nappies, right, he took the area of the Ukraine, right, Crimea, he took control of that particular area. Right? He did that in 2014. Then in 2015, the war with Syria really ramped up. And Assad, who's the president of Syria, asked the Russians to bring their military in and to help them and to bring them into this position here. And Russia moved in and they've got a base in Syria and they moved their army into here. And they formed an alliance, as I said, with Iraq and Iran. And the nations of Libya and Sudan are also in alliance with the nation of Russia. And at the same time, America said, well, we're going to be involved in the war against Syria as well. And they moved their military and their planes into this area, along with the UK, and along with the planes from Australia. And Saudi Arabia as well has let America use its military bases. Then, in 2016, a significant event happened in the world, and that was the UK voted on Brexit. And they started to move away from Europe and to start that process. And then what we're seeing now, in 2018, as we've tried to look at tonight, is that the nation of Europe is now beginning to move, particularly as a result of what Donald Trump said. He's beginning to move away from the nations of America and from UK and to form closer alliances with Russia. And that's what the map of the world is beginning to look like politically. Now, you have a look at that compared to what Jesus said or what the prophet said would be the shape of the world when Jesus would return. There it is there. It's starting to look pretty close, isn't it? That's the world that we live in now, and some of the key alliances which are in place. And that's what Jesus said the world would be like when he returned. And once that political structure is in place, the prophet said that the things could move very quickly.
Look what Daniel, the prophet, said. He says, at the time of the end, when the king of the north, and this is this big alliance in the north, the king of the north shall rush upon him, this is Israel, like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall come down into countries and shall overflow and pass through, and he shall come into the glorious land. That's the next step that's got to happen. And the prophet Daniel here says that when that happens, it'll happen like a whirlwind. It's not going to happen slowly. Now, we don't know when that time is. We don't know the day, and we don't know the hour. But the world is starting to look very similar politically to what Jesus said it would be like when his son is going to return. But what about our society? What did Jesus say about the world that we live in? What did he say that would be like when he returned? And I suppose this is where it hits a little bit closer to home. Because although all those things are happening in the world and we can see politics and Trump and all these Putin and stuff, it seems a little bit too far away from us. But Jesus said, I'm also going to tell you what the world is going to look like from a society point of view when I come and I return. He said this, what it's going to be like is it's going to be like the times and days of Noah. Just as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the Son of Man. Likewise, just as it was in the days of Lot. So the times of Lot and the times of Noah are what the world is going to look like, the society is going to look like when Jesus returns to the earth. Now, what were the days of Noah and what were the days of Lot like? Well, the first thing was, in Genesis 6 verse 11, it says, the earth was corrupt before God. So in the times of Lot and the times of Noah, God's laws no longer became relevant. They no longer became relevant to the population of the world. That's what the times of Noah and the times of Lot were like. Now, isn't that what our world's becoming like? Isn't our world becoming like the times of Lot and the times of Noah, where God's laws are no longer relevant? We've seen that in our own nation. And why do we see that happening? Look at this map here. This is from the census that was taken in Australia just 2 years ago. And it shows a very big change which is happening in our country, in our society which we live. And I'm sure you're seeing it every single day in the schools that you go to, in the workplaces that you go and work. We are very quickly, as a society, moving away from God. You look at this map. It shows the religious affiliations of Australia over the last 100 years. Look back here at 100 years. Virtually no one on that list didn't believe in God. Some form. They believed in God and the Bible as the authority. And then when it got to sort of like the 1960s, when flower power and all the revolutions happening in the world, you look how quickly, and this sort of shows it from here on here, how quickly we as a society are moving away from God. We are very, very quickly moving away from God, and his laws are becoming less and less relevant. Look at the jump even from 2011 to 2016. And don't you feel that just in general life now? That there's just less respect, or people don't even know a lot of the cases about God and who he is or the Bible. And God says that's what's going to be like in the time, in the society that my son is going to return. It's going to be in a world that is increasingly godless. And that's the world we live in, isn't it? We live in a world like that, that is becoming increasingly godless. And it's harder, isn't it, for all of us as a result of that. It's harder for us to hang on to the principles that we know are true. Because there's so many people in the world that they're turning their backs on it, that don't care about it, that see God as nothing, that see God as rubbish. And Jesus said, that's what it's going to be like when it's near to my return. People are going to increasingly turn their backs upon me. What else is the world going to be like? Well, in Genesis 6, it says it would be a world full of violence. a world full of violence. And when I thought about that for the first time, I thought, is our world really full of violence? Is it really that violent? And I think it is. This picture here is a picture of a protest that happened early this year, as a result of gun violence in America in the school. You probably remember it when I think there was 12 people killed in that school. 12 people. And the whole nation of America, virtually, a huge proportion of people, hundreds of thousands of people, went to the streets of Washington protesting to the president to say, we're sick of these shootings. We're sick of shootings of our kids. And you know what? I looked it up. I looked up the stats about how many mass shootings have been in America this year. You know how many mass shootings? And a mass shooting is more than four people shot or killed in a particular incident. You know how many times that's happened this year in America? 174 times. 174 times. And you know what? I've never heard of hardly any of them. Probably just that one. And the reason why is because it happens every single day. That's virtually every single day there's a shooting like that in America, in schools or in other places. That's how violent our world has become. And you know what? It's become so normal that I don't even notice it anymore. Do you find that? Do you find that it's not until there's a massive thing on the internet or some huge thing that's going to shock me that I even care about it anymore? Because it's become so normal and so every day. And it's not just in America, is it? It's in our own country as well. It's not even safe to go out in the streets half the time because our world is becoming increasingly violent. And I don't even notice it because I'm so distracted with my life. And God said, that's what the world's going to be like when my son returns. It's going to be just like the times of Noah, and it's going to be just like the times of Lot. It's going to be a violent time. And what else did he say? He said that people would be eating and drinking and building and they'd be marrying. And essentially what that is Jesus was saying, it's going to be, I'm going to return at a time when there's going to be distractions everywhere. Distractions everywhere. You look at this and see whether our world matches that description. Probably my brother-in-law showed me this, and I just reckon it's unbelievable. Probably a great barometer of where the world is actually at, right? A good way of seeing where the world is actually at is what's on TV. Now, you think about the shows that are on TV, and you think how they align with what Jesus said the world would be like. Eating and drinking. Family food fight. Great Aussie Bake Off. MKR. MasterChef. Sylvia's Italian Table. Poe's Kitchen. Let's Do Coffee. Good Chef, Bad Chef. Buying and selling. Location, location, location. Selling Houses Australia. Love It or List It. The Aussie property flippers. All TV programs that are on our TV, they're Australian TV programs. Building and Planning, The Block, House Rules, Dream Build, Grand Designs, Dream Gardens, Deadline Design, Marrying and Giving in Marriage, The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, Bride and Prejudice. I've never heard of half of these. Bride and Prejudice. First Dates, yummy mummies, right? I don't know what that's about, right? Yummy mummies, Real Housewives, Married at First Sight, 7 Year Itch. Sorry. 7 Year Switch, okay? I told you, I've never watched it, right? 7 Year Switch, Love Island, which I think is one at the moment that's going on. Right? All these things are happening, and they're exactly what Jesus said, weren't they? And we look at this list and we think, oh, well, Jesus said they'd be eating and drinking and buying and selling and building and planning and marrying and giving a marriage at the time when I return. What's wrong with that? These all seem like innocent things, and they are innocent things in themselves. But the problem is that the world is so consumed by all this stuff. There's so much distraction by all this stuff that it can't think anymore. Can't get it? There's no time for God. When I come into work on Monday morning and my employees come in and we talk about the weekend or we talk about what we've been doing, this is all the stuff that people talk about. Their lives are full of this stuff. And there's no time for God. There's no time for fitting God into anyone's program. Because there's distractions everywhere. And there's things to do. And there's things to watch. And there's things to plant. And there's things to buy. And there's things to see and watch every single day. And it's distracting. And Jesus said, that's what the world's going to be like when I return. That's what it's going to be like. Now, is that our world? I feel like that's what our world's like. And I find it distracting. I don't know about you, but I just find it so hard in this world to concentrate anymore. This picture here is a picture, right, that was painted by someone to describe what modern society has become. And I can relate to that picture. Can you relate to that picture? I can relate to that picture. Because most of my life is spent looking at that thing. And I can't concentrate anymore on anything. Because there's always something to see, or always an email to reply to, or always some video to watch, or something to look at, or something to see, or something to read. And it's got my face like that. That's the way I feel. And that's what our world's like. And it's sapping our time away all the time. It's sapping our energy with all these little distractions. And what essentially does it do that God said was so dangerous? He said it takes away time from me. There's no time for me in any of that. Because there's so much other stuff going on. And Jesus' exhortation in all that was remember Lot's wife. I want you to think carefully about Lot's wife. And you think about Lot's family. When the angels came and they knocked on that door. And it was time to go. And the angels plead with that family. They say, it's time to go. It's time to leave this city and escape the destruction. And you know what his sons-in-laws did? They laughed at him. Because they didn't believe it. They thought that what the angels were saying was ridiculous, was stupid, made no sense to their world understanding. And it got to the point where the angels had to physically drag Lot and his family out of that city. And when he dragged them out of that city, and they were looking over that city, we read about Lot's wife, don't we? And it said that she looked at that city. And the word looked in the Hebrew means that she looked intently at that city. And it means she looked to regard with pleasure and care. That's how she looked at that city. And all that stuff, all that distraction had got deep into her heart, hadn't it? And she now had no time for God. And that became her love. And that's what Jesus said. Remember Lot's wife. We need to somehow, in this world, give some time to God. To let him and his son come into our hearts. We've got to do that. And you know what? That's why this week is so precious. It is so precious.
because you can just get away for just 1 week of your life from all the rubbish, all the stuff that's so much on us every single day, and you can just be here with each other. And you can this week think about that man, the only man that's important in this world. And wasn't he an amazing man? The greatest man, young people, that's ever lived upon this earth. That's the man, Jesus Christ. I remember when I came to my first study week, 1994, we looked at this same subject. And I remember, for the first time, understanding who that man was. And it was powerful to me. It was powerful. And that's what this week can do for you. And that's what Jesus is saying here in these verses. He wants you to put him in your heart, deep into your heart, and get rid of all these distractions. And put him in there. And to think about how powerful his example is and what God is holding out to each and every one of us. It's powerful, young people. It's powerful. That's what God wants us to do. So for the next 2 days, or for the next day that you've got, chuck your phone, forget about Instagram, forget about emails, forget about checking the news like I do every single day, and just enjoy this. And try and let that word seep into your heart, because when you go back out there, it's harder, isn't it? It's harder every single day. But it's worth it. You've seen this week, haven't you? You've seen that man, Jesus. You've seen what he stood for. You see what he did. And it's better than what Putin's doing. It's better than what Trump's doing. It's better than what anyone else in this world is doing. It's an amazing man that man was. And we're going to bury him deep into our hearts as we wait for his return, which we hope will be soon. This is what Jesus said we need to do to be ready. One, the Lord wants people ready to welcome him, doesn't he? When that door opens, when that knock comes, we want to be there to open that door. He will come unexpectedly and inconveniently. Prepare for that. The rest of the world is going to be caught unawares. We shouldn't be caught unawares. We should be ready. We know this stuff. We know that he's coming. We should be ready.